the direction of making cycling a fundamental pillar of a fully integrated transportation system. Portland will not become a model of urban health as a result of geography or climate or historical happenstance. It will happen only if we carefully plan and fully fund this path. The major employers of our community, no fewer than 5 of the top 7, incidentally, are in the health business, are clamoring for this commitment. You endanger us all today if you ignore their demands. Thank you.
Wow. That was great. I missed reading you in the paper. Before we move on to the public sign-up list, we have an amendment.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I have a minor amendment, which I've discussed with Ellen. I don't think there are any concerns. This is to the Action Plan Policy 3.5B. So I move that we change the language. The current language says work with advocates for bicycling on natural surface trails and natural resources. Work with advocates for bicycling on natural surface trails and natural resources advocates, developing strategies that increase opportunities for bicycles on natural surface trails. And then my amendment would add, while protecting the natural environment and enhancing pedestrian safety.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion of this amendment. Carl, would you please call the vote?
Fritz. And this is just to show that we do take the policy seriously and that we are intending to use them as guidance. And so I wanted to make sure that this was stated as I believe it was intended. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Amendment approved. Do we have anyone who wishes to testify that has small kids?
Yeah,
coming up, Paul.
Well, it's not with me.
Yeah, no, that would be today. Yeah.
I guess I deserve that. All right, then.
Your
what?
Amendments, Ellen's amendments?
Ellen, yes. I move. You have some amendments, Ellen?
I believe they were distributed.
Yes. So I move the amendments from staff, the technical in nature that clarify certain points, not substantive in nature. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Anyone wish to testify? Carla, would you please call the vote on the staff amendments?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Now we can get to the first three.
First three, please come on up, are Donna Cohen, Terry Parker, and Jim Chassie. They will be followed by Katie Larsell, M. Susan Dean, and Michelle Pirro.
Now, again, some of these folks are regular folks that testify, and I ask that we show ourselves to be the Portlanders that we are and accepting different points of view. Let's go.
Hi, thanks. My name is Donna Cohen. I'm from St. John's. The law says that when bicyclists pass pedestrians, they should slow down, give an audible warning, and wait for the pedestrian to move over. In my experience on shared paved and unpaved routes, I find these actions to be the exception rather than the rule. And by the way, I mentioned this law before. I double-checked it to one of the staff, the bicycle pedestrian staff, and the reaction I got was, well, I don't know if that's a law. That's pretty serious if the staff doesn't realize that is a law. I avoid...
You're fired.
I avoid the Esplanade, and I'm not sure I'm going to be going back to Springwater Corridor where I was a week ago and had these problems. This issue is more serious even for seniors, where hearing acuity, reaction times, and balance are not ideal. According to the CDC, of those over 65 who fall, and we're talking about falling, I'm going to wait until I... Okay. According to the CDC, of those over 65 who fall, as opposed to even being, say, pushed over by a bike, 20 to 30% suffer moderate to severe injuries that make it hard for them to get around or live independently and also increase their chances of early death. It scares the hell out of me when bicyclists pass me by fast, close, and with no warning. In the 250 pages of this plan, other than things relating to children, I only saw one item that addressed this. Under 4.2b, expand the Share the Path campaign and focus efforts on high bicycle and pedestrian traffic areas, and the priority was medium. It wasn't even high. Until this plan makes that a higher priority and includes more serious efforts, educational efforts, and enforcement efforts around the proper way to pass pedestrians on shared routes, I can't support the plan.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Mr. Parker.
Thank you. I've tried to cut the 3 minutes to two. We'll see what happens. Motorists and taxpayers in Portland ought to be outraged by not only the politically vetted stack deck committees and bicycling special interest self-selection process used to develop this plan, but also because of the excessive price tag. Over $500 million, plus another $6 million annually, all hidden from public view until recently, is an unwarranted cost for all this social engineering. That's over $600 million so bicyclists can have an undue hierarchy bestowed upon them with special privileges and immunities that further advances their egos. Hierarchy movements have no place in America. Most bicycle activists want all the frills of specialized bicycle infrastructure as long as somebody else pays for it. Currently, one more trip made on a bicycle compared to by car, is one less trip that helps pay for transport infrastructure. Redistribution of wealth is specifically restrained in the U.S. Constitution. The term wealth includes the simple earnings of the working class taxpayers and motorists who do not ride a bicycle. Conformity requires any bicycle infrastructure and any bicycling indoctrination agenda to be funded with licenses and fees directly assessed on the bicycles, not from siphoning off motorists' paid taxes and fees, and not with any other taking, such as a backdoor tax on utility bills or a bond measure that must be paid by the general public. Things like public golf courses, swimming pools, tennis centers, etc., are all funded with user fees, and so must bicycle infrastructure. Moreover, anybody that would say we don't tax people for what we want them to do and tax them for what we don't want them to do is promoting socialism. Additionally, there should be no taking away of existing motor vehicle infrastructure or parking to accommodate bicycle infrastructure that would add to congestion, narrowing travel lanes to as little as 10 foot wide. TriMet buses do not fit in those lanes because they are 10 foot, 1/2 inch wide, mirror to mirror, as well as some trucks are. In closing, providing specialized bicycle infrastructure for bicyclists that use it is a privilege, not a right. Currently, the majority of bicyclists clearly demonstrate they are not ready to accept responsibility when they refuse to follow even the simplest traffic rules and safety devices. Strict enforcement with hefty fines and not just education is needed to keep bicycles in compliance with the law. Bicyclists need to accept the responsibility of financing this as well as accept the responsibility of complying with the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Mr. Chassie.
Hi, my name is Jim Chassie. I represent the Palhurst-Gilbert neighborhood in Outer East Portland, and I'm a member of the East Portland Action Plan. And I've also served on various other transportation committees throughout the city and in East Portland. When I was asked to sit on the Bike Master Plan Update Committee in January 2009, my biking experience was limited to riding the Springwater Corridor, the I-205 multi-use path, or the Woody Guthrie Trail, as some people have said, weekend trips to check on current land use proposals as the land use chair for the Neighborhood Association. But I had no bike. It had been stolen, and I knew nothing about bike transportation in this biking city. I accepted the invitation, having seen firsthand the effect of high fuel prices on residents of my neighborhood. Suddenly, people were riding their bikes everywhere because they just couldn't afford the $4 per gallon for fuel. I want to thank all the steering committee members for all the questions they answered for me through the process, especially Mia Burke and Jay Graves, who chaired the committee. I was inspired to purchase a bike and committed to get to know the city by bike. I found a close neighbor, Susan Dean, another steering committee member, to commute to work with me, 20 miles for her, 15 miles round trip for me, and proceeded to explore the city by bike. I put thousands of miles on my bike exploring the city, and the money I saved in fuel costs this last summer paid for one of the bikes I purchased. And I gained an immense amount of knowledge of how bike transportation could contribute to the transportation challenges we face in Outer East Portland. We attended Northeast and Southeast Sunday Parkways in preparation for Outer East event that has been confirmed for July 18th, the same weekend as the East Portland Exposition. The Bike Master Plan has also addressed issues from the East Portland Action Plan, specifically Section T.3, to increase safety and accessibility of bicycling in East Portland, a huge accomplishment. With ODOT's commitment to improving the I-205 multi-use path, ongoing work to make Gateway Green a reality, and this plan, I'm confident bicycling will continue to grow in East Portland. I urge Council to adopt this plan. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony.
Next three are Katie Larsel, M. Susan Dean, and Michelle Poyoro.
Good afternoon. Welcome. We have our third member.
Here she comes. They'll be followed by Mark White, Lenny Anderson, and Don Arambula.
Please proceed.
Okay. My name is Katie Larsel, and I was on the steering committee for the Bicycle Master Plan, and I'm here to testify in favor of the plan. And I want to thank the mayor and the council for receiving my testimony. Now, I'm also on the East Portland Action Plan, and I want to thank the city for setting that up. It's one of the best things that ever happened to East Portland, I think. And there were three of us on the steering committee from East Portland, and it was good that we were on the steering committee because when it comes to bicycles, the Outer East Side needs some help. I am convinced that we have low ridership, mainly because we have a discontinuous, poorly filled-in street grid. Hopefully, grid is not a destiny, but because I think there is a huge potential to increase ridership in East Portland. We have 25% of the population of the city, wonderful access to light rail. We have two great bicycle trails, the Springwater and the I-205 corridor. Another trail, the Sullivan's Gulch Trail, is in the planning stages. The benefits of more cyclists in East Portland would have a disproportionately positive effect on our neighborhoods. Cycling saves money, increases health, even increases public safety by putting more eyes on the street. Cycling makes for good neighborhoods. Having bicycle infrastructure is now one of the amenities of Portland. Yet because of our difficult grid, we very much need the East Portland Bicycle Infrastructure Implementation Action Plan, which is a high priority feature of the master plan. When it comes to bicycling, business as usual leaves Outer East Portland out. If you look at this excellent plan, you will notice on page A14 a list of already funded projects. The Central City is getting $10 million, Northeast Portland $7 million, Southeast Portland $11 million, Southwest gets $8 million, North Portland $4-plus million. East Portland is funded at under $1 million. So those are the projects that are in the kind of the hopper right now. Now, I realize that this is not a plot. These projects were picked often by the ease with which they could be implemented. However, the East Side needs proactive investment, and I will repeat that. The East Side needs proactive investment by the City of Portland if we are going to have the valuable bicycling amenities that the rest of Portland has. So I think this plan with its East Side fast-tracked study gives us a fair shot at joining the rest of Portland on our bicycles. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and really it was a privilege to serve on the Bicycle Master Plan Steering Committee.
And just to clarify, the federal stimulus that you mentioned is from last year, and there's another round, another season this year, but it is based on their definition of ready-to-go projects.
That's what I said, that I didn't think it was a plot, but what I'm saying is business as usual leaves us out.
And this year in the budget process, for the first time in the city's history, we're going to be able to see city expenditures by geography, not just capital, but operating. And everyone up here on the city council gets the is passionate about being able to make decisions in part based on geographic equity. And hopefully this new budget reform will allow for more geographically rational spending by the city. But the feds, they told us what the rules were, and we had to go with ready-to-go projects.
I appreciate that, and I love that idea.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. My name is Susan Dean. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members, and thank you for your attention to the city comments or to the citizen comments regarding the Bicycle Master Plan. I'm an active member of the East Portland Action Plan Bicycle Subcommittee and have a 2-year appointment to the Multnomah County Bicycle Pedestrian Citizen Advisory Committee. I'm also a member of the Bicycle Master Plan Steering Committee. I commute by bicycle daily from Southeast 118th and Powell to OHSU, and that's about 20 miles round trip. As a community member and a representative of the East Portland Action Plan, I appreciate that the Bike Master Plan and the resolution before Council acknowledge the uniqueness of East Portland by recommending a study of the issues facing East Portland. I wholeheartedly support both the study's effort to better understand the strengths and weaknesses of the bicycle transportation network proposed for East Portland and the study's planned public outreach intended to increase understanding of what the needs, wants, and attitudes of East Portland residents are. This study is necessary to inform and establish an action plan that can be readily implemented. According to the 2009 PBOT bike counts, women make up 19% of East Portland cyclers, the lowest count for women in the city. The study and implementation plan will also serve to address the East Portland deficit of low-stress routes that are needed to approach gender parity, which we know is a significant indicator of bike facility success. On my commute, it's not until I reach Southeast 75th that I can ride on a low-stress bike boulevard. We in East Portland hope that the study of East Portland bike facility users and non-users and the implementation action plan will serve to address our unique needs, create lower stress routes, and correct the gender disparity, as well as bring our community closer to equitable inclusion in Portland's transportation options. I hope that you will join me in fully supporting the Bicycle Master Plan and the resolution before Council. And I want to take just a brief second and thank you, Mayor, for approving the Sunday Parkways and East Side in July.
You betcha.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Michelle.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Michelle Poyero. I am representing the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. The BTA supports this excellent bicycle plan. We urge you to adopt it, implement it. Adopting this plan and building this plan.
I wish I'd done that.
I think you just woke up security.
Is one of the best steps we can take to making Portland a very healthy, safe, and livable city. I have heard a few people suggest that this plan may be expensive if it is completely built in the next 20 years. But I just want to think about, compared to what? If you compare the cost of our entire existing bike network, as Roger Geller did, to 1 mile of urban freeway, you realize that we're getting a really good deal, and there's nothing expensive about our bicycle infrastructure. If you compare the cost of this entire bicycle plan over 20 years to light rail, it compares to just one single light rail line. And then if you compare the cost of this bicycle plan over 20 long years to what we are spending every year, publicly and privately, on ill health, it is an incredibly good investment. In addition, the cost of this plan, just like the cost of those urban freeways that were built in decades past, would not be entirely or perhaps even mostly on the city. There are opportunities for us to get new sources of funding and get greater sources of funding from the federal government and state government. And implementing this plan, that will be a key component. The BTA's 100 business supporters support this plan. You've received a letter, I believe, from the Portland Business Alliance that supports the goals of this plan. You've also received a letter from the BTA and the newly formed Bicycle Business League that includes 130 signatories who are businesses, most of them not related to bikes, who also support this plan. And I believe that they support it because they know that health costs are not good for business, and they want to have healthy employees with healthy families living in healthy neighborhoods. I hope that you share this vision. I think I know that you do. The other people who share this vision are the hundreds of people who gathered with us outside, took an hour off work. Some of them have come in here today. We'd like to urge you to adopt this plan, to work quickly to develop new funding sources and gain access to greater funding sources from federal government, and to build it. Thank you.
Michelle, I have a...
Let him clap, then yes.
I know. So first, thank you for the work of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance in bringing people together and helping on this plan. Thank you for your partnership in the community. I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to the concern that we heard from an earlier testifier in terms of bicycle-pedestrian conflicts and what the Bicycle Transportation Alliance can do to help us with that issue.
I think we can do a couple of things. One thing is we can continue to do the outreach and education work that the BTA has done, but also the city, through its programs, does a very good job of reaching out to people and educating them about how to properly operate a bicycle in various contexts. I don't know what your experience is, but I've been bicycling in Portland for almost 10 years, and at the beginning, I was just I was a terrible bicyclist. I was, like, not using lights and probably cutting people off and not realizing it. Now I'm much more polite and prudent. But I have noticed that other people are more polite and prudent, too. 5 years ago, if I was at a red light at, say, Madison and Grand on the east side, stopped at a red light, it seemed like every other time somebody would pass me and blow that red light, and it really offended me. And now that almost never happens. And I also noticed that more people on trails have bells, more people are giving an audible warning when they pass. So I think that we are learning, as bicycling becomes more mainstream, more of a normal thing to do, I think people are learning to do it better and learning to do it properly. So the city's education work has a lot to do with that. The BTA's education work has a lot to do with that. But honestly, I think the evolution of the bicycle system from one where only hardcore aggressive people are comfortable to one where many people can be comfortable, people who are prudent and polite when they're driving their cars and when they're walking, I think that we'll see that peer pressure and cultural change also help make that happen.
Now, I would add to that list on the enforcement side, working with the police bureau, we do stings for bicyclists as we do for automobiles. And also, Mark's here on the safety side, Mark Lear, and we encourage folks to call it into the 823 safe number because sometimes they're, not always, but sometimes if we get repeat complaints about pedestrian and bike conflict, there might be an engineering or some sort of design issue where the path weaves slightly, and so naturally people go to one side. So call it into the 823 safe number.
I would just add, as council knows, we adopted late last year a community policing agreement with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and our police. I know there are probably some others, but the whole purpose is to provide an ongoing forum to talk about issues of concern, and also to deal with, to the extent we can, identify design solutions. I think transportation is also part of that community policing agreement, and we appreciate BTA's work on that. Continuing work.
Thank you very much for all your advocacy. Great work. Next three.
Are Mark White, Lenny Anderson, and Don Arambula. They will be followed by George Crandall, Allison Graves, and Roger Averbeck.
Mr. White, welcome back.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good. Nice to be back. My name is Mark White. I'm president of the Palhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association. I'd like to provide an example of the benefits of a small section of just one component of the plan to my neighborhood specifically. The plan includes the construction of a bike boulevard on Southeast Bush Street that runs through the neighborhood. The section from approximately Southeast 108th to Southeast 136th goes past three schools, Earl Boyles Elementary, Ron Russell Middle School, and Gilbert Heights Elementary. As of January 29th, those three schools had a total enrollment of 1,916 students. That's nearly 2,000 students who will potentially benefit from this small section as it connects them to their home, school, friends, play areas, and the overall neighborhood. Not to mention the peace of mind for their parents knowing that the safety of their children has increased exponentially. In addition, Palhurst-Gilbert has the distinction of being the most obese neighborhood in the city of Portland, according to research by the Northwest Health Foundation. The installation of this and other bicycle facilities in the neighborhood, along with the sidewalks as they come in, will help tremendously by providing another tool in providing good health and reducing the prevalence of obesity. By doing so, we can address the numerous health issues associated with obesity, such as heart disease, type 2 diabetes, breathing difficulties during sleep, certain types of cancer, and osteoarthritis. The health and public safety benefits of safe and accessible bike routes provides taxpayers with a significant return on their investment. I'm honored to have been asked to participate in this milestone event for Portland and look forward to the coming years as the plan is implemented throughout the city. In closing, I'd like to extend my gratitude to all those involved in the development of the plan and their commitment to providing equity for East Portland, including the mayor and council. And lastly, I'd like to extend a very special thank you to some of the individual advocates from East Portland. They include David Hamston, Jim Chassie, Susan Dean, Tom Barnes, Katie Larcel, Walter Lersch, and Eliza Lindsay. They are among the unsung heroes of the plan, and the city of Portland, especially East Portland, is a much better place because of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright, for your testimony. Mr. Anderson.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Lenny Anderson. I am the project director of the Swan Island Transportation Management Association. And I've submitted a letter, copies are being distributed, from the Swan Island TMA, Lloyd District TMA, and the Westside Transportation Alliance, all in support of this plan. We call out in this letter, of course, what we all know, that bicycling is an incredibly efficient way to move about. We also call out the key part of our efforts are working in a public-private partnership to stimulate economic development and vitality. Lloyd District is a great example of that, and let me say that on Swan Island, the heart of that effort, and it is going on now almost to the day for 10 years, is moving freight. We move freight on Swan Island, and the businesses, the major employers there, Daimler Trucks, Vigor Industrial, UPS, support this project that I head up by helping people find alternatives to driving alone, because we know that the primary obstacle to moving freight, whether it's on Swan Island or on I-5, is people alone in their cars in the peaks. By helping people find those alternatives, we are able to move essential goods, products, and parts, and that's what we do on Swan Island. I'm happy to announce also, and I provided this, which got passed around, a photograph of a trail that we just built. I've never been strong on planning. I think this plan is great. I'm all for it. I support it, but I really like building stuff, and we have been doing that on Swan Island. And I'd like to say, actually, in appreciation to the staff, I meant to say thank you for listening to us, because the first draft put in street bike facilities on Swan Island. And I've been riding a bike in Portland since I was 6, and I was once hit because I was on a sidewalk. But on Swan Island, I am on the sidewalk. I am not going to count on paint to help me deal with a 53-foot trailer. So what we do on Swan Island is above the curb. And you see an example of that, which we just finished with a BES grant along Channel Avenue. And the exciting thing is that when the shipyards, Vigor Industrial, saw that trail, they said, we want to have it come down to the shipyards. And they have put forward money and commitment to make that happen. And when you look at this picture, this sidewalk here actually connects Daimler Truck's headquarters, where there's 800 engineers, and their research center, where they just put $40 million on the table to match the federal money. And so now the engineers are not going to have to walk in a 60-mile-an-hour street, but can actually walk on a sidewalk trail. So this is the kind of economic development and the kind of strategy that we need to see adopted everywhere to move freight and to keep the city thriving. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Mayor. Council members, I'm Donna Rambula from Crandall Rambula. And we are planners, urban designers, architects, and bicycle planners. And we're proudly will be opening and implementing a cycle track in Missoula, Montana, the first urban downtown one within the next couple of months. So to a degree, I know you've got lots of experts, but I feel that we've got a bit of credibility, too. George Crandall, my partner, will follow with more detail to my opening remarks, and I hope that you take this to heart. Council, I'm here today because I want to support and strengthen Portland's reputation as the cycling capital of the country. To realize this vision, I believe we must have a strategy for bicycle master plan that will increase bicycle ridership and strengthen Portland's reputation as the cycling capital of the country. To realize this vision, we must have a plan that provides a framework and a strategy that will, one, attract new riders. Our current system is tapped out at 7% of commuting trips. While it does a good job accommodating what is often called the strong and the fearless, the athletic cyclist, the white male cyclist, it does not provide and attract for those who are cautious but capable, women and children and minorities. An effective bike plan must expand ridership than simply improve and expand the system for those who are currently riding. The only proven way to achieve this is to invest in a network of European protected bikeways or cycle tracks, and you've been on those, Mayor. So the other piece of this, we need to link our plans to our bike plans to our land use plans. Portland has a history of integrating transportation improvements to our land use plan. The plan must clearly describe the improvements and link our downtowns and our town centers with this bike system. It's not only a plan for commuting, but for trips to the grocery store, the doctor, the school, and the restaurant. It must be a tool for economic development. The question should not be, what does a plan cost, but what does it leverage? Sadly, the current bike plan offered for consideration today is timid and underwhelming in response to these concerns. What we'd like to see, and I urge the council not to approve the Bureau's bicycle master plan until the actions identified by George Crandall are addressed. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Carla, who are the next three in the three beyond
George
that?
Crandall, Allison Graves, and Roger Averbeck. And they will be followed by Matthew Arnold, John Miller, and Keith Leiden.
Mr. Crandall. Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Welcome back. Yeah. Mr. Crandall.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. Don has already introduced me. So this morning, the Oregonian stated that the 2030 bike plan, quote, leaves out of the equation those who harbor furtive bike riding thoughts but are fearful of cars and trucks and yet might still choose to pedal off if they felt they wouldn't get clipped or dead, especially with kids in tow. Portland Research supports the Oregonian's analysis, and you've got that graphic in front of you, I think. Mm-hmm. They gave it to you. Indicating that only 7% of the population, the strong and the fearless, will ride on the road with traffic. That's a fact. The Portland plan, a ride with auto traffic solution, does little to attract ridership from the capable but cautious. Our firm's analysis of the plan indicates, one, the plan is for the strong and fearless, a 10% solution. Case studies from around the world make it clear that Portland will be lucky to get a 10% mode split with a bicycle boulevard paint on the street approach. Claims that this plan is a 25% solution are uninformed and exaggerations. Two, the plan ignores the capable but cautious. Cities in Denmark and the Netherlands with 40% to 50% of all trips on bicycles achieve this mode split through the use of cycle tracks or protected bikeways connected to significant trip-generating land uses, shopping, employment, and business. Three, the substantial economic stimulus associated with biking is missing. If Portlanders spend their fuel savings locally instead of buying gas, and John Fraganassi talked about this, and sending the money overseas to multinational corporations, Portland's annual local economic stimulus with a 40% mode split, and we've run the calculations on this, could approach $1 billion a year. That's a year. Now, there are a number of articles supporting that 10% maximum. I won't go into that. That's in the testimony. The Portland 2030 bike plan was developed by the strong and the fearless to serve their constituency. It does not serve the larger population, and the public investment cannot be justified in terms of increases in bike ridership. If the plan had been developed to serve the rest of it, it would look very different from what is in front of you today. A plan that does not offer the best bike solution cannot be called a 2030 plan and certainly is not a vision for the future. It is a missed opportunity. We would like to see City Council take the following actions. One,
you need to summarize.
Okay, accept the plan for what it is, a draft, a good first step. Two, require the staff refine it for a 40% solution. Three, require that the economic stimulus be included. You can't afford not to do that. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Crandall.
Can I ask George a question?
Absolutely.
Thanks, George. Requiring that the plan include a 40% solution, you're meaning achieve a 40%
mode split.
Bicycle split by
a mode split, right, as part of the 2030, yeah.
As opposed to the current 25%.
As opposed to the current 10%, you're lucky. There is no example anywhere in the world of more than a 10% mode split with the system you have planned.
So we actually did a lot of focus grouping, and we did a lot, not self-selected focus grouping, but folks that were selected at random, and a lot of empirical research to figure out for Portlanders what it would take to get the middle category of the capable and cautious to ride. And reasonable people can disagree and come to different conclusions, but I just want to rest assured to those that are listening, in this particular case, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Yeah. For both, for the capable and cautious, the bike boulevards, not as they are now. They're rather weak now, but the bike boulevards as we've envisioned them in the plan and other, but just to highlight one factor, come out of that localized research.
May I respond to that, Mr. Mayor, because in your plan, there's a reference to that, and they say 80 to 88% of the people who attended those meetings, the planning meetings, were the strong and the fearless.
Right, and there's a difference between the planning meetings and the independently gathered focus groups and the scientific surveys. So I want you to know that the planning work was the problem identification and the solutioning and the prioritization of the problems and figuring out what the triggers were for the capable and cautious that came out of the scientific focus groups and the independent surveying that we did.
Yeah, and I'd like to respond to that, if I might.
I think we've had a good exchange here.
Okay,
we're going to have
you.
To agree to disagree on this one.
All right.
But the whole purpose of this was to get the capable and cautious to come out and ride. Sir.
Hi, I'm Roger Averbeck. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and commissioners. Appreciate the chance to express my thanks to Portland's Bureau of Transportation staff for creating this plan and for revising it in its current final draft. I'd like to state my support for a couple of specific policies and objectives. The first being ensure all neighborhoods have adequate low-stress bike facilities connecting to neighborhood commercial corridors and centers so that local residents can safely and comfortably access them by bike and on foot. That's an immediate priority in the final draft. The next is that ensure that, I'll paraphrase here, that the benefits of bicycling are accessible to all Portlanders, regardless of race, ethnicity, age, economic status, geographic location, or language spoken. I have a concern that I'd like to state. Even with the interim improvements that are part of the final draft, that's Project 8331, meaning uphill bike lanes or widened shoulders, paved shoulders, I strongly support that improvements. But the final plan as is in Southwest Portland, where I live, we might not get there. We might not accomplish these objectives because of our narrow collector streets remain as barriers due to their hilly nature, the increased cost of implementing projects due to stormwater, and just the very nature of it. Some of our collector streets, as you know, are slated for world-class facilities in the plan, but that's a distant future in my mind, and also with uncertain funding. For Southwest Portland, both the pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure really needs to be brought up to a minimum standard for safety and accessibility to transit, local schools, business, and employment. And I encourage you to approve the bike plan. I appreciate your continued support for the funding for the projects in the plan, and I'd also like you to consider support for a revision of the pedestrian master plan and design guidelines. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi.
Hi, Hi, I'm Allison Graves from the Community Cycling Center. Thank you very much for considering the plan today. Since 1994, the Community Cycling Center has been teaching bicycle safety skills and knowledge to folks all around the Portland metro area, and thank the Commissioner Saltzman in particular for supporting our bike clubs through the Children's Levy. Over the years, we've seen every day what bicycles can do to change individuals, their families, and our community for the better. And we're very encouraged that you're considering this plan. We urge you to build it. Frankly, we think that this plan is going to make Portland the healthiest city in the United States. The Community Cycling Center is particularly enthusiastic about the efforts to ensure the focus on the health and equity aspects of the plan. And we, as an organization, have been pleased to consider that the plan can encourage people of all backgrounds to choose bicycles with this focus. For the past year, the Community Cycling Center has been reaching out to communities of color in particular and asking about barriers to bicycling. We've spoken with nearly 200 people in Northeast and North Portland in the last 6 months, particularly folks in the African American, Latino and Hispanic, and African immigrant communities, and are finding that there are remarkably similar interests in bicycling and key issues around barriers to bicycling. Safety education, for one, and separated bikeways are common themes among those groups, and we are working in collaboration with Hacienda CDC and with New Columbia to design culturally specific programs to address these themes, and we are looking forward to following up with the council on our successes with those two partners, and we urge you again to adopt the plan and to build it so that more people in Portland can choose bicycles. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Carla, the next three
are Matthew Arnold, John Miller, and Keith Leiden. And they will be followed by Joe Wilson, Corky Collier, and Jeff Swanson.
Mr. Arnold.
Please, hello.
Please begin. Welcome.
Please. My name is Matthew Arnold. I'm the chair of the Portland Bicycle Advisory Committee, a volunteer group that you have charged with advising the city on matters pertaining to cycling. Our committee strongly endorses the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030, and we urge you to not only adopt but also fund this truly visionary plan. Our city needs a great leap forward. 2009 became the first year since 1995 in which bicycle ridership actually decreased in Portland rather than substantially increasing. As the city's own report on the 2009 bike counts indicates, we may have reached the limit of our ability to attract new riders with the standard bike facilities that we currently employ. The bike plan for 2030 seeks to induce a greater mode split share for cycling by focusing on bike boulevards, cycle tracks, and other facility designs that will appeal to a wider range of potential cyclists, especially the large segment of Portlanders who are interested but concerned about cycling on our city streets as they exist today. We also need to save our planet and ourselves. For decades, we gave our public realm and a lot of our public dollars primarily to the automobile. While recently we strive for a more balanced transportation system, CO2 emissions, air particulates, asthma, and obesity have all gone up. The bike plan for 2030 is predicated on the notion that bicycling is one of the most sustainable and healthiest forms of transportation for trips of 3 miles or less. If Portland is serious about solving the climate change and public health issues that plague us, we will prioritize bicycling and other active transportation modes. At our committee's meeting next Tuesday evening, and let me be clear, and please pass this on to Commissioners Fish and Leonard, you're all invited. The committee will begin to implement this plan, but we're going to need your help. Despite increasing ridership and mode split share over the last couple of decades, bike facilities traditionally have represented less than 1% of PBOT's capital budget. More city funding should be directed to bicycle infrastructure projects and programs, and new funding opportunities should be aggressively explored in order to fully realize the benefits cycling can have for our city. We strongly encourage you, our city council, not only to adopt this plan, but to champion it, to express your commitment to action by adequately funding the programs and physical improvements the plan outlines. In short, we can't wait to help you build it.
Build it, build it. Some of you are falling asleep.
I figured out the key.
Gotcha. And I want to thank you for the work, your work, and everyone else on the Bicycle Advisory Committee. And parenthetically, Commissioner Leonard had long ago scheduled doctor's appointment, but he wanted to convey he's an enthusiastic supporter of this plan. He's a a bicyclist himself. He's got a long ways to bike in from East Portland. So thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller.
Thank you. My name is John Miller, and most of you know me from my work at Host Development, a nonprofit developer of homes for ownership here in Portland, and from my tenure with the Oregon Opportunity Network, the city's Homeownership Advisory Committee, and as a commissioner on the Housing and Community Development Commission. As a member of the development community, I've had conversations with several of you over the years regarding affordable housing development, affordable housing in general, and green livability issues. And today, I'm wearing all of those hats, plus a passion of cycling in my heart, to grant my full support and endorsement to this Bicycle Master Plan. As an advocate for affordable housing, in particular affordable home ownership, I support this plan because cycling is an excellent transportation choice for the low and moderate income families that we serve. By building safe and accessible bike routes, our residents will have cleaner, healthier, and much more affordable way to commute, allowing them to better function within their means. As a developer, I support this plan because it increases the overall livability of our city and of our neighborhoods. This improvement leads to safer, more attractive neighborhoods, and frankly, these improvements will attract more buyers to our developments. Further, as a green developer, this plan is an excellent complement to our mission. Lastly, as a parent, I support this plan because Portland is truly a unique and livable city, and I want it to stay that way, especially considering the 1 million or more people that will be moving here in the next 20 years. By developing this world-class cycling network, we'll greatly increase the chance that our children will also be proud of our city's livability in the future. A word of caution, however, we're faced with the grand opportunity tonight to make a significant, meaningful change in our city and its overall livability. The vision of the plan is impressive and attainable as long as we commit to building it, and that commitment will require adequate and reliable financial commitment by the city. In the past, I've been involved in several initiatives that look great on paper, Operation Home, School Family Housing Initiative, or two to name, but they died on the vine due to inadequate funding and lack of a champion in City Hall. So today, I encourage you to adopt this plan and then commit to funding the plan. Adopt it, fund it, and then build it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. Mr. Lydon.
Well, I'm Keith Lydon. I'm with the BAC, and I was also on the steering committee. I support the plan for the reasons that have been stated. I think the city staff and the others who have worked on it have done just a marvelous job. I just would like to talk about a couple amendments that have been proposed that are still not on the plan yet, so I'm going to toss a couple Hail Mary passes to you and see if you'll grab these.
We're used to that.
Yes, okay, so here goes. First one is on page 60 for the routes. There's been a discussion about a complete north-south route through Gabriel Park, and you'll see that there's only a partial one that goes from Canby up to 45th. The purpose of this recommendation from Southwest Trails starting about 2 years ago and most recently in the Sweeney letter that you just received is that that would be the low-stress route that we've been talking about here for about the last 2 hours to go all the way through the park. 45th, as you know, is far from being bicycle-friendly. So we really think that that line ought to be on the map so we can have that conversation with the community and parks to see what we can do to create a low-stress route that would provide a connection between Hayhurst, Alpen Rose Dairy, and Multnomah Village. The second pass is for, there was a mention made earlier about a implementation action plan for the east side. We think that's a great idea, and we think that also that type of commitment should be made to Southwest. We're certainly not similar neighborhoods, but our street systems in many respects are similar, and one of the problems that we had with the 96 plan is we had a lot of improvements to make, a high cost. The 80% strategy is very similar in that regard, and we think that's going to be very important if Southwest is going to progress to get more focused and strategic about what we do, and we would need the staff's help on that. Thank you very much.
So a couple of comments about funding. The one thing is certain, and that is you don't get more funding unless you've got something to sell. And not just piece of paper, in fact, not just the bikeways proposed within it, but actually the results. So first, if you got to have something, you got to have something to pitch. So that's why it's in that order. Transportation projects are plans. you know, none of them start out funded. So that's not unusual. Southwest, East Portland, you know, I could wring the neck of the people that let those areas be urbanized outside the city of Portland.
Yeah, tell me.
Because if it was inside the city of Portland at the time, the developers would have been required to put in more complete basic infrastructure. So we're definitely in the remedial, doing what we can. Southwest is especially, as you know, is challenging because of the terrain makes it expensive. Having said all that, I think it's doable. And just like everything else we go after, once we have something to inspire us and something to sell, we chip away at it. Did you want to say something?
I just have a question. Why is the trail, doesn't it continue through Gabriel Park? What was the rationale of the...
I haven't really heard a rationale, to be honest. So I mean, it's been proposed a few times and just haven't heard other than...
What did they tell you?
I don't know.
What did they tell you why it was done this way?
Pardon?
What did they say to you why it was done this way?
My understanding is that the Parks Bureau doesn't like it for some reason. I think there's a concern about potential conflicts between bicyclists and pedestrians, and obviously all those things would have to be worked out. But my concern is if the line's not on the map, we don't even have a conversation because it's not part of the plan. And we direct people out to 45th and hope for the best.
I will have a couple of follow-up questions from staff at the end of testimony, so I'll follow up. And I think your point is also well made, that I was interested on the map earlier that the neighborhoods south of Barber and then Markham and Hillsdale are on the second highest list of low-equity neighborhoods that people don't tend to think of in Southwest as being less affluent, but in fact those neighborhoods are. So I will be looking. There's plenty of projects on the list, for sure. But we do want to...
There's no shortage.
I appreciate the work of Southwest Trails and Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc., and I know that there's a letter in the record from Southwest, which the staff has responded to a certain extent, so we will follow up on that. Thank you.
Great. Did you have a second Hail Mary, or was that it?
It was the two of them. See, I was so fast, I even got it in 2 minutes.
I guess, Mayor,
funding, right.
Commissioner. I guess I would like to, since we are talking about building it and funding it, I guess I want to suggest right now one funding mechanism that we should take a look at, and that is the City Council in 2008 budgeted a certain amount of money from our utility license fees to go for transportation projects. Right now, I think it's about $3.2 million going to transportation projects. The cap on the amount that goes to transportation is $4.3 million. I would like this council to consider taking any money beyond that $4.3 million and sequestering it into a bond fund that could then be used to finance projects in this plan.
Well, we'll definitely take a look at that. Thank you all very much for your testimony. The next three
are Joe Wilson, Corky Collier, and Jeff Swanson. And they'll be followed by David Hampston, Brad Perkins, and Steph Routh.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Who would like to go first? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for your time this afternoon. My name is Joe Wilson. I am a proud resident of the city of Portland, a student at Portland State University, and a Timbers Army member, and a supporter of livability. And I bring up the Timbers Army affiliation because, as I'm sure you know by now, we are very passionate about our city. We love it very much, and we can be a bit outspoken on things that we think are good for it or bad for it. Yeah, you know. This bicycle master plan is one such thing that I feel strongly about, and I would like to encourage you today to vote yes on the plan and further to find the funding for its implementation. As I understand it, the plan does not truly commit the city to much in the way of funding. The plan is merely a blueprint for the future. And I find this somewhat disturbing but also understandable. My understanding does not, however, mean that I would be okay with the plan being approved and then shelved or implemented at a fraction of its intended impact. Bike traffic makes up a larger percentage of the total transportation on the road than it receives in funding. And this current plan could push that funding up to 5% of the total transportation budget, but it would seek to increase ridership up to 25% of transportation. Surely you realize the dichotomy here. If there is a question of funding, it would be nice if it could be a question of whether or not to fund the plan at its desired level of impact at a full 25% of the transportation budget, or whether or not we think we can get the same impact with less than 25% in funding. Instead, the question as it pertains to funding, and as I understand it, is $613 million or less.
Since the proposed $613 million is spread out over 20 years, and since it breaks down to a 4 or 5% of the city transportation budget, I don't see that being a huge funding roadblock, and I trust you to make that happen. Now is the time for bold decisions. Don't listen to those who say this plan is for special interests. It is no more for a special interest than the fire department is for a special interest. Just because everyone in the city does not use a service does not make the service unnecessary. I may never have a house fire, but I still benefit from the existence of the fire department. And a person may never ride a bike, but they will benefit from a balanced transportation system. You and I both know this, but there are those that would sway you with such arguments. This master plan, like an essential service, benefits everyone in the city, not just those who use it. And for this reason, I again strongly encourage you to pass this plan and to work to find the funding to make it happen. And in the words of all the signs in the room, build it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Go ahead.
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Salzman, Commissioner Fritz, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Swanson. I'm the logistics manager with Schnitzer Steel Industries, and I'm also the vice chairman of the Portland Freight Advisory Committee. The Portland Freight Advisory Committee is generally supportive of the plan and its goals and objectives. We have some specific concerns that we've addressed in some detail in our letter to the mayor and to the council that center on conflicts that are likely to arise as portions of the plan are integrated with the TSP. And some suggested considerations in resolving these conflicts from a freight perspective. Number one, where possible, modal conflicts should be avoided for obvious safety reasons as well as compelling efficiency reasons. For instance, we try to separate, to grade separate, auto and rail traffic where we can, and we should likewise not encourage recreational bicycle traffic on major freight corridors or in industrial areas. And I think Lenny Anderson made a good case in the Swan Island case where he talked about trails and sidewalks that are separated from traffic. Where the bicycle plan aligns bike traffic with auto and freight traffic, and note that from a facility standpoint, it's difficult to distinguish between autos and freight in a policy setting. This should be done in such a way as not to reduce the throughput and velocity of autos and freight on the corridor and on the system. Three, there are apparent plan objectives to construct bicycle facilities in freight rail rights of way. This is bad for freight mobility and efficiency and will constrain the objectives and effectiveness of the climate action plan. Freight rail will play a key role in such a plan, and restricting rail mode infrastructure expansion by impinging the right-of-way with bike trails will increase reliance on trucks as well as expose trail users to unnecessary hazards. And four, in areas where bikes, autos, and freight must share a constricted piece of infrastructure, the city needs to address the adequacy of lighting and striping and so forth on the infrastructure. So our primary concern as a committee has been the safety of the bicyclists, pedestrians, and the motorists who are using and sharing the right-of-way. And we look forward to continue to working with the various users of the rights-of-way as we continue to work on this plan.
Thank you, and thanks to the Freight Committee for your supportive letter. Mr. Collier?
I have a question. Oh, so do you want to go first? You may answer my question.
All right. Corky Collier, I chair of the Portland Freight Committee. It's kind of exciting to be here today. Exciting to see everybody supporting this plan, and the Freight Committee does support the plan as well. But we've got that little bit of caution that when we get excited, sometimes we also get myopic. Jeff laid out a number of the conflict areas that we've noticed as we went through the plan in detail. You have those in our letter. You also have some specific suggestions to resolve those details. To the best of my knowledge, all those suggestions support the plan. They'll make the plan stronger. I don't believe any of them will take away from the plan at all. Certainly is not our intent. To give you a real good specific example, and one of the major ones, is there are a number of city bikeways that are being put upon existing priority truck streets and in industrial areas. That makes it a little bit difficult when there's a conflict to be resolved by city planners or engineers. We suggest that in those cases, not that bikes be removed from these areas, but that in those cases, when there is a conflict, that the freight master plan design guidelines be the priority. It just simply makes sense. To flip this around, if we were talking about design guidelines on bike boulevards, well, you know, there are UPS deliveries on bike boulevards. Nothing wrong with that. But nobody for a moment would suggest that the freight master plan design guidelines would be the priority design guidelines for a bike boulevard. That'd be silly. So we're just simply asking the reverse should be true as well. We think with a few simple changes, this will be an even stronger bike plan, and we look forward to it in the future.
Thank you both very much. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thank you, first of all, for getting your letter in well ahead of time so that staff had a chance to look at it and respond. And I've seen a staff response. Have you seen the staff response, and do you have a response to the response? Do you have a refined list of things that you would like us to change as amendments before we adopt the plan?
If you're referring to the staff response that suggests, I believe the language is, that other modes be considered, great, thank you, but that really doesn't get to the point. The problem is, if you're a city